We're on verse 32. Who is the master executioner slaughtering all sentient beings? Yeah. The terrifying Lord of Death, who has power over the entire world. Okay, so who is the master executioner slaughtering all sentient beings? The terrifying Lord of Death, who has power over the entire world. When in Buddhism we use the expression the Lord of Death, it doesn't refer to a real being. This is anthropomorphizing a natural occurrence that indeed is terrifying to almost everybody, because at the time of death we separate from everything that we know. You know, our friends and relatives, we're no longer with them. Our possessions, we can't hang on to. Even we have to give up our body, which is the most cherished thing. And then our whole ego identity, you know, because our whole ego identity is gained, you know, in relationship to the environment and all the other people in it. You know, and so we have all these ideas, I am like this, I am like this, people treat me this way, they should treat me that way. All of that disappears. Everything we're familiar with disappears. Yeah. And so for people who are attached to things, this is terrifying. Yeah. And for those of us who grasp at being a real person, as, you know, the image of this real person we think we are dissolves, then it's very frightening. Okay. So why does the Buddha ask us to reflect on this? Why is this in the text? You know, if it's, yeah, it's not to frighten us so that we get full of panic the way ordinary people do. But it's to get us to realize that death is something certain. We have no idea when it's going to happen. And at the time of death, we can't take anything with us. So we need to prepare ourselves now. Because the only thing that does come with us is our karma and the mental habits that we've developed. Now, everything, all the actions that we've done, the imprints of the actions, they come with us. But the people, the possessions, our body, our reputation, everything in regards to which we created all these actions, they stay here. Okay? So we may have, you know, stole something in order to get something for our family. The family stays here. Whatever we stole stays here. The karma of stealing, the imprint from that karma, goes with us into the next life. Yeah. So we can look at any action like this. And because most of us, when we make decisions, when we have intentions before we act, we're only thinking of what is immediately beneficial. Yeah, I want this, I'll take it. Yeah, or I'm hungry, I'll take it. Without thinking, what are the long-term repercussions of my action, even beyond this lifetime into future lifetimes? Yeah, so we don't consider that. So we don't think about the karmic imprint of the action. We don't recognize that the whatever person or thing that we were trying to protect or get or defend that we separate from and can't come with us. We forget all that and just focus on now, what I can get now. And that view leads us to a lot of uncontrolled behavior. You know, when I said last week about, you know, don't be spontaneous when it comes to non-virtuous intentions, this is exactly it. You know, because we're very spontaneous, you know, regarding procuring and protecting what we want. Yeah, but it doesn't pay off in the long run. And similarly, you know, we hesitate very often to do virtuous actions because it's a little bit inconvenient, it takes some effort. You know, oh, I'm making an offering, then I can't use that money for myself. You know, oh, I respect somebody, but then I can't toot my own horn so other people won't think I'm so great. You know, so we're reluctant to do virtuous actions. Again, thinking only of the immediate benefit or harm instead of the long term. Yeah. So, you know, when we meditate on death, when we contemplate death, it helps us really reassess our priorities in life and what is important. Yeah, is getting what makes me happy now really important in the long run, considering that I'm going to die and all that stuff that I'm trying to get is not going to come with me? Yeah, is being right really that important? When I die, all the people in front of whom I'm right don't come with me. Yeah, is winning the game or winning the argument important? Again, in the long term, none of that comes with me. Yeah, is having every comfort that I want really that important? You know, again, no, none of that comes with us except the karma, you know, the imprints of the karma. Yeah. And so it really, the reflection on death really makes us stop, you know, and say, well, what really is the meaning of my life? And how am I going to spend my time? And what do I want to have to show for it at the end of my life? Do I want possessions, a family, a great reputation, you know, having had a good career, lots of possessions, you know, some status? Do I want that at the end of my life? Or do I want the seeds of positive actions? What is going to be more valuable to me at the end of my life? Yeah. A scrapbook full of memory pictures, or now they have, you know, the little things on tablets, one picture after another of your whole life. So you have this whole thing with all your pictures on it and you can look at it. I remember this, I remember that, that was so wonderful. Oh, this person was so good, that was, you know, do you want to have that at the end of your life? To just look back and see all the things that you were or did? Yeah. You might think so, but really, what use is all of that? All of that stuff is gone in this life. It's not even there at the end of our life. You know? And then when we think about what we did, you know, in those relationships and to get those things that are now no longer here, then the burden of, you know, our destructive actions really weighs heavily. And at the time of death, you know, there's no time to do purification practice. There's no time to forgive or apologize or let go of things. You know, it's like, gotta go. You can't say, Lord of Death, excuse me, I'm not ready yet. You know, can you delay my death a little while? I need to do some Dharma practice. No, that doesn't work, you know? And so since we don't know when death is going to come, and it really is the great executioner, then it really behooves us to keep our life in order and to avoid harmful actions, to purify the ones that we've created, to learn the techniques to calm our mind and release the afflictions. Because that's what's really going to be beneficial to us at the end of the day. And that's work that nobody else can see. So we're not going to get a good reputation out of practicing the Dharma. You might get a good reputation out of going up different levels and presenting yourself as somebody in the Dharma scene, but that has nothing to do with being a good practitioner. Because being a good practitioner is what's going on inside. Nobody else knows it. So, you know, if we're trying to pull over the wool, pull the wool over someone's eyes, it doesn't help us. You know, being a hypocrite in the Dharma does not help at all. You know, because karma is what, you know, what rules the situation. You know, what's going on in our mind is the real cause of what we experience. So it doesn't matter, everybody loves us, everybody hates us, they approve, they disapprove. All that stuff is totally inconsequential. The only thing that might matter is what wise people think. So the opinion of the wise, the opinion of the Buddhists and the Bodhisattvas, that can matter, you know. Because if the wise disapprove of what we're doing, we need to wake up, okay? But everything else, okay, so we need to really get down to transforming what's inside and to really setting our priorities correctly so that we make use of our time wisely. Okay, so the Buddha did set up some of our precepts because monastics did things that the laity found objectionable. So does the opinion of the faithful laity matter? It depends on if the faithful laity have wise opinions or not. Faith doesn't necessarily indicate wisdom. Okay? So it really boils down to the wise. Because I've had, you know, people who are longtime Dharma practitioners. It's so amazing. I remember there was one woman, she criticized me for not propounding women's equality. And there was a man who criticized me for being against men because I wouldn't let him, I said at a retreat he couldn't sit on the sofa next to his girlfriend. And, you know, and I mean, these are people who are long-term practitioners. And yet that, you know, one person told me, "Oh, you're too strict with how you keep your precepts." Another one told me, "You're too lax how you keep your precepts." You know? Okay. If my teacher told me something, then I'd really listen. But the other things, you know, who am I going to follow? I mean, I really had to laugh when I got some of these accusations. Well, they, you know, death happens. I mean, the consciousness separates from the body. And then again, what karma ripens at the time of death is going to influence what realm they're reborn into in their next life. So once one's in the lower realms, it's very difficult to create the positive karma for an upper rebirth. So you kind of, in many ways, have to rely on previously created positive karma when you were a human being, and then hope that at the time of death, you know, somebody you're in some situation where somebody reminds you of the Buddha Dharma Sangha and helps that previously created positive karma ripen. So that's why they say that just having a precious human life is kind of like half of the thing of getting to enlightenment. You know, just having the opportunity we presently have. Because it's so difficult to get. Okay.